Good morning, everybody. Welcome back. It's wonderful to be with you again. And Lou, how are you?
I'm doing very well. I'm very excited because you've been promising me some interesting episodes here. So I've been waiting for them most of the week now as we get ready.
I hope all of you find this interesting. Lou, I hope I can keep my promise to you. But the Gita is very scientific. After you get through the initial parts, which we have, which are more basics, the Gita starts to become very scientific. And it tells you things that we in science don't know yet or haven't really figured out or haven't put it down on paper. So as we
Can I take a second here to set people, listeners up with your background? Because this is always the part that fascinates me. Someone could tell me about the Gita and tell me about some of these teachings, but your perspective is so fascinating to me because you're an accomplished psychiatrist. You're a man of science, right?
Right. I'm a physician specializing in psychiatry. Yes. So I'm a man of science. And many of the things that I'm learning from these scriptures, we don't speak about in science. I mean, if you look it up, yes, there is. You'll see in the next episode, we'll be talking about what the Gita talked about, the chaos theory or entropy. Oh. Or how the world was formed, the universe was formed, how we function as human beings, what makes this world go around. All of this is so fascinating.
Yeah.
But that's in the next session.
I love the chaos theory.
Chaos theory, right?
Yes, I'll be interested in this. Yeah.
Yeah. So today what we're going to talk about is how the Buddha spoke about the two arrows of suffering. And I found this very, very interesting. And don't forget, Buddha was initially a Hindu. He was a Hindu prince. He went into the forest, became self-realized, and he did not like the certain parts of the Vedas and other parts of Hinduism, which were prevalent at that time when he was. So there was the caste system, or there is still the caste system in Hinduism, which Buddha didn't believe in, that most Hindus don't like, but which was set up by the priests at that time. Following what was written in the Gita talks about the caste system, but not in the way in which the priests developed it. So the priests developed it so that they made themselves number one.
Right.
And pass that on to their children, which was not the way the scriptures meant it. But anyway, Buddha basically took a lot from the Vedas, the Upanishads, the Gita, and formed Buddhism. And so they're very closely related. They're like brother and sister, or two brothers, in terms of Buddhism and Hinduism. So Buddha talked about the two arrows of suffering. But before we get there, let's talk about pain and suffering in and of itself. And the reason I said, Lou, you might find this of interest and why you as the listener might find this of interest is because we all suffer.
Yes.
We suffer when we get a paper cut. We suffer when we get pain of any kind. We get a headache. We get a flu. We get fever, cold. We suffer when somebody says something mean to us or doesn't invite us to a party, or you lose your job or your reputation is affected. Notice what I'm doing here, folks. Those of you who have been following me for the last 30-plus episodes recognize that what I'm doing is I'm taking the suffering caused by one's body, one's mind, and one's intellect. So the body has pain fibers all over itself, except in the inner parts. Interestingly, the inner parts of the body don't have any pain fibers. I don't know if you knew that. Did you know that, Lou? You can take a man's intestine and you can cut it, and he won't feel any pain.
Yeah, I was aware of that, yeah.
Yeah, the only pain that one feels in the intestines is when they are expanded beyond their capacity. They feel severe pain or they're constricted. But you can cut it, you can burn it, and the intestines don't have any pain. But the rest of the body, where you might feel a paper cut, you might feel a knife, has pain fibers. So you feel pain. That's what happens with the body. All the senses, the five senses, feel that kind of discomfort, pain, suffering, whatever you want to call it. The mind feels it with emotion. So somebody does not love you back. Somebody doesn't respect, doesn't care for you. Your love for somebody else is unrequited. All of that will cause you discomfort and pain. The intellect is more in favor of respect, position, fame, power. And when you lose that or you don't get it, is when that intellect starts to suffer. So you say, I'm suffering, I'm in pain, I'm unhappy. But we have to recognize that we are not defined by our problems. You say, I am so unhappy. Are you really? Because you, if I know you as Lou, I'm just using you, Lou, forgive me.
Right.
You are Lou. You've always been Lou, and you will always be Lou, as you know yourself. I mean, really, you're the Atman. Lou is just a name.
Yep.
Remember last time we talked about Naam, Roop, Vyavahara, which was name,
right,
form, and function. You're Lou as you know it as the name right now, but you're not unhappy. You're not suffering. You think you are unhappy. You recognize that there's a part of you that in your mind is unhappy. You were not unhappy in the past. You are not unhappy. You're not going to be unhappy in the future. There are going to be periods where you're not going to be happy. You may be unhappy now. And that's the part that Buddha talks about.
All right. My mind, my body, or my intellect is unhappy, is feeling pain. And that's what's
suffering.
Unhappy. I'm observing
Correct.
That it's unhappy.
Right. So the unhappiness comes from the mind. So essentially what the scriptures say is that whatever suffering you're going through ultimately seats itself in the mind. Okay? So the pain is one thing. You recognize that you have an injury to your body and you say, this is painful. I'm not in pain. My body is in pain, number one. But ultimately that pain goes to the mind and the mind starts to say, why am I in pain? It hurts. I can't do this. I can't do that. I can't travel. I've got to go to the doctor. All of that adds to the physical nature of the pain. So the worst problems that somebody has, this is very important to recognize, that you're not always going to be in suffering. The worst problems that you have were not there before, and they won't be there in the future. They're not always there. In deep sleep, those problems are gone, right? Even, I mean, if I have the death of a loved one, a very, very loved one, and I'm crying and I'm hurting and I'm in pain, but when I'm fast asleep, not dreaming, but when I'm fast asleep, I don't feel that pain. I wake up and I might even be dreaming and I might be dreaming of happy times with that loved one.
Right.
And I'm actually happy. But when I wake up, I say, oh, that was just a dream, or I'm back to reality, and the pain starts again. So this suffering, pain, depression, unhappiness is not permanent. That's the key.
Right. And sometimes you get in a thought, you get in a place, you get in the moment, and you forget about that pain for a while, and it gets alleviated. You can do it purposely through meditation and controlling your mind, but sometimes it just happens to you. You're out with your kids and you're having a good time and you forget about what else is bothering you.
So true.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen elders sitting around mourning the death of their spouse, and they look and their grandchildren are playing and they're doing something. One minute the grandparents are crying, and the next minute they look at the grandchildren, then they smile and maybe even laugh because they find what they're doing is funny. So you're right. Ultimately, it's the mind that determines what happens. So keep that in mind. First of all, we as the inner consciousness, the Atman, are not what's suffering. The mind is the one where this suffering ultimately settles down. And the fact that it's not always present. It wasn't present in the past. It's not going to be present in the future. And even in the present, it's not all day, and it's not present in deep sleep.
Right.
Other thing to keep in mind is that the world and you are constantly changing. So there's one constant, which is you, the Atman. You, the Atman, not you, the body, or the mind, or the intellect. You,
right.
the Atman, is constant, but everything else around you is changing. Your wishes are changing, but at that time, you want a certain thing from your spouse, let's say. You want your spouse to be a certain way, but your spouse is changing too. So you're unhappy that your spouse is changing, but you too are changing.
Right.
So let's say you like spicy food, and you say, you know what? Your wife, as she gets older, says, okay, I'm going to make less spicy food. So you're unhappy. Say, why are you making less spicy food? But her hand just tends to make it less spicy because she has changed.
Right.
Now she says, okay, my husband likes it spicy, so I'm going to make spicy food. But in that time, you've grown a day older, 2 days older, and you say, you don't like spicy food. Now you're unhappy because the food is too spicy.
Yeah.
So that change that keeps coming about, both in you and in the ones that you are with, constantly causes unhappiness, which is suffering in and of itself. So the world is changing. The world is constantly changing. You're changing. What Buddha said is that you are bound to be hit in this lifetime by at least that first arrow. Every one of us is going to be hit by the first arrow. The first arrow hits you. That is your karma, because of your karma. The first arrow hits you. Let's say we talk about an illness. You get an illness for whatever reason. You need surgery for whatever reason. You're starving and you're hungry because of some things that you've done in the past. That you cannot change. That is your karma. That is what you deserve. That is what you're going to do. At least once it's done, you say, my debt is paid. Mm-hmm. That's always a good way to look at suffering, is to say, well, I owed this. I did it. It's done now. It's behind me. Now I can look forward to the future. You can try to go to doctors and get surgery and get food for your starving self, but there's no final solution to that first arrow. You have to go through that suffering, and you will go through that suffering. The second arrow that Buddha says you can deal with, but in fact, you don't deal with it because you don't recognize it as the second arrow. That is the real prolonged suffering, that because you don't deal with the first arrow properly, you're actually causing the hit by the second arrow. So you get some discomfort because of the first arrow that you can do nothing about. Something happened to you. You can't avoid that. But instead of saying, okay, it's my debt that I was supposed to pay, I got cheated by somebody out of a lot of money, and I'm therefore deep unhappy, I'm suffering. But I must have cheated somebody in my previous life and caused somebody to have this, so now I'm getting it. It's a debt I have to pay. I'm going to try and get this money back from this person, mm-hmm. but I'm not going to sit here, cry, and get hit by the second arrow. If you do, then you're sitting there with your head in your hands, blaming yourself, blaming others, cursing yourself, not sleeping at night because you're so worried. That's the second arrow. And that lasts for a prolonged suffering. Yeah. That's what Buddha says. In suffering, you can suffer with your body, you can suffer with your mind, and you can suffer because of outside forces. So let's look at each one of these. As we go through life, everybody is looking for something else depending on one's vasanas. We talked about this. Mm-hmm. Some people are looking for beauty. They want to be more beautiful, right? You want to go to Hollywood, become a film actress. You want to be the most gorgeous person in the room. Beauty, fame, power, reputation, money, mm-hmm. education. These are some of them. Now, there's more. Somebody who has all of this is very handsome, very good looking, very powerful, very rich, very intelligent, has a lot of money, still commits suicide because his mind is suffering so much. We've all heard of these people.
Yes.
Why is that? Because they believe that their second arrow, which has hit them of their own doing, they have the first arrow, everything is done. But their second arrow, which is brought on by themselves through their mind, is so painful that they feel that they have no other option but to kill themselves. Next, look at the body. Stephen Hawking, very famous scientist, mm-hmm. very brilliant, mind is absolutely fantastic with abilities to do a lot of thinking. In spite of his body being totally crippled, was fulfilled in his life because he did a lot of scientific papers, discoveries, and presumably was happy. I don't know, but there are people whose bodies are completely crippled, but they are happy.
He was happy enough to accomplish, yes.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
On the other hand, look at somebody whose mind is defective. John Nash, the movie A Beautiful Mind, or the book Beautiful Mind. Princeton, schizophrenic, severely ill, psychiatrically, mind damaged. First one, Stephen Hawking's body was damaged. This guy's mind is damaged. You know, goes on, accomplishes, brilliant mind, and goes on through life, in spite of this mind being defective. So the point is that we could have a defective body, a defective mind, have everything else in the world, but how you deal with what you have or don't have is what causes your suffering, the second arrow. Okay? What causes all of this? And what we need to recognize is that consciousness is what we enlivens all of us, right? Mm-hmm. The Atman, the self, is what is enlivening our mind. Because after all, it's not our mind that's being enlivened. Without the consciousness, you would not have any of this. The real I is I, the consciousness. So analogize this. I heard this from Swami Sarvapriyananda, that consciousness is like light. So light shines on the ocean, and the ocean is all completely lit up, and you see the ocean because of the light. The ocean is all wet. Water in a river is all wet. When the sun beats down on it, the ocean you can recognize, but the light is not wet, right?
Right.
A train moving very fast, light is on it. The train is moving fast, but the light is stationary. The light doesn't move. Similarly, all of this suffering that's taking place, the consciousness is only a witness. It is looking at everything that's happening, but the consciousness, the real you, is not affected. So what we have to deal with in saying this is to say, I am aware of the pain, but I am not in pain. It takes practice. It's not easy. But to be able to detach yourself, I mean, if total detachment is 100 on a scale, even if you detach yourself 1 or 2 or 5, you are that much better off, as opposed to delving yourself completely into saying, I'm in pain, I'm in pain, I'm in pain, I'm suffering.
Right.
I am aware of the pain. I am not in pain. I am the witness of the pain in the body. So in that fourth state, we talked about it in the last two episodes. I think that was episode 36, 37, where we're talking about the fourth state or Turiya. In that, there's a total cessation of all suffering because one is self-realized as Jesus was, as Buddha was, as so many other people who are self-realized. In that state, that fourth state, there is no suffering. They still feel the when Jesus had nails driven through his arms, his hands, he felt the pain. It's not as if he didn't feel it. But because he said, this is my body, you know, he was able to deal with it in a way different than you or I would deal with it, because we're not self-realized.
Right.
In that fourth state, there's a complete cessation of suffering. In Sanskrit, in the scriptures, it breaks it down into two. One is the body and the mind suffering from its own accord, of its own accord, and that in Sanskrit is called adhyatmika. Adhyatmika is suffering that you've brought on by yourself, your own making. It's of your own making. Adibodhika is suffering caused by other living beings. So the typical example given in the scriptures is that of a mosquito and a tiger. Say you're sleeping in the forest,
yeah,
and mosquitoes are bothering you, and you're sleeping there, you're meditating and all of that, and you're not yet self-realized, and your body's completely bitten by mosquitoes. That mosquito bite is bothering you, so he's, I'm suffering as a result. You're now not suffering because of your mind, but because these are real bites,
right,
real from the outside, from other living beings,
right,
mosquitoes and tigers. So, of course, a tiger comes and, you know, eats away half your leg,
yeah,
you're going to be in pain. And that's real pain,
right,
that you are aware of. So that's suffering as a lot other beings. Then the suffering that the scriptures talk about is because of the forces of nature. Hurricanes, typhoons, monsoons, you know, you are meditating in the forest, but there's torrential rain and you're wet and you're cold and all of that, you're suffering. You're up in the Himalayas and it's freezing over there. So there's different kinds of sufferings, but the self-realized persons, they actually recognize that this is happening to their body and not themselves. In the Himalayas, you know, people sit there throughout the year. They sit there, whether it's snowing, whether it's minus 80 degrees, howling winds, and they're totally oblivious to that, sitting there cross-legged. Well, someday I'll tell you a story about when I went to my son's business school. He was in business school up in Boston, and he said, "Mom, Dad, would you like to come to the business class that we're having?" And we went there, and it was an ethics class that basically said, how should we deal with a situation like this? And it's a long story, so I won't go into it now. But basically, in that story, these professors from Harvard Business School had gone up to the Himalayas, and while they were just a little bit off the top, which they'd worked for years to acclimatize themselves, then a naked sadhu walked by them, completely naked except for a loincloth. And they felt he was dehydrated and he was going to die, and they felt like they needed to stop and give him hot chocolate. And he had no oxygen mask like they did. He had no clothes. He had no slippers, barefoot. And they said, well, we got to go. And they went up to the top. By the time they came down, he was nowhere to be found. And they, this ethics class was basically saying, should we have stopped? If it were a white man, would we have stopped? If it were, if it was a woman, would we have stopped? My mind was saying, how, while you guys were walking around with these insulated clothes and oxygen, this guy lived there with no food, up in the top of the mountains, walking around barefoot with no clothes. What? We're talking about ethics? That is more fascinating to me. What was a naked man living up there on the top of the Himalayas where you climbed up over days with all kinds of backpacks and people carrying your stuff for you, and this guy lived up there, and he just passed you on the top of the mountain? But my point is that they don't suffer the way we do. They don't experience the cold. I don't know what it is about them, but their minds and their bodies are completely under the control of their consciousness. So that, my friends, is Buddha's first arrow and second arrow. And I'm going to stop there. Lou, you have anything you want to add before we move to the next session?
No, this is fascinating. The first arrow, the second arrow is the metaphor that I came up with, the analogy I came up with. You get hit by the first arrow, you have to move, or you're going to get hit with the second arrow, right? So the first arrows are what should prime some changes for you to examine what's going on.
Yeah, how you deal with that first arrow is what's key. Whether you move or not, you don't have to make any changes as long as mentally you're aware that this arrow has hit you.
Yeah.
And you say, okay, the arrow hit me. It's because of what I did in my previous lives. This is what I got hit. I can't change it now that I've gotten hit. Deal with it and move on to the next is what determines whether you get hit with the second arrow or not. You're the cause of that second arrow if you should choose to.
All right, more episodes on Facebook right here. You can go back and catch up on episodes. If you need to take them along in the car, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, almost anywhere you can get a podcast, you can get Gita, Memoirs of a Psychiatrist. So if you're just joining us now, go catch up and get ready for these next episodes. It's going to be fun.
Thank you. Thank you all. See you next time.